LA has the largest jail system in the country.
You got people that have been in jail just like one time in their life, can't get nothing because of whatever mistake they made.
I stole some ground turkey because I wanted to feed my family. We was hungry.
Off the Block, stories tracing the path from city block to cell block and back. Find it now at kcrw.com or subscribe on iTunes.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You know, my guest has been in so many culture-changing moments, from Do the Right Thing to House Party to Bad Boys to his TV show Martin, that it's easy to forget that he's a great stand-up comedian. We haven't seen him do that for a long time. Run Tell, that was 2002? Is that what that was?
I believe so.
Yeah. Probably his last stand-up movie was Run Tell That. But he's now got a new stand-up special on Showtime. Martin Lawrence is sitting across from me. It's a pleasure to have you sitting across
from me. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Elvis.
No. But again, I'm sure a lot of people don't even think of you as being a stand-up, because between the Bad Boys movies and the show, they think of you as more of an actor than a comedian, don't
they? Yeah, and that happens sometimes because of my body of work in the movies and stuff like that. But my stand-up is where it all started. You know, my stand-up is the reason why I'm here. So, you know, and the reason why I was able to do all those movies is because of my stand-up.
No, it's interesting because just watching you in the little prep thing in the special, doing time, you were shadowboxing, think, oh, you did that in the opening credits for Martin.
Yeah.
that's always your thing? You always like you loosen up by doing a little bit of shadowboxing?
Yeah, because I train like a boxer.
You still train like that? You were a boxer.
Yeah, I was a boxer when I was younger, so I still train like a boxer. So I'm always shadowboxing or hitting the pads or something like that, you know.
Because, you know, it's funny, watching you move on stage, you actually move like a boxer. You're like almost always ducking, weaving, your shoulders are always going, you're bending your knees like you're about to throw a punch. But it's funny because I always thought of it being like dance, but it's really like watching somebody working out in the ring the way you move around on the stage, isn't it?
Yes, I love to use the stage. I love to, you know, it's just me and a mic up there, and you have all this stage. And so when I have that audience out there, I like to feel that whole stage. And as soon as I get on stage, it's about taking command of the audience and the crowd, you know, the energy. And I have to bring the energy. You know, if I want a crowd to be up and enjoying it and laughing, then I got to bring that kind of energy, you know, with my first joke or just the way I come out and say hello and get them into to ready to enjoy the show, you know.
Because you, it's telling me before we got started, it's been 14 years since you did stand up on stage, and that last film was probably almost got an NC-17, didn't it?
You So Crazy.
Yes.
You So Crazy got an NC-17 because I refused to take an R rating because I didn't want to cut no material out because they felt it was really vulgar and X-rated or whatever. And I didn't want to sacrifice my material and my show just to get an R rating. And then back then I took the NC-17.
But it's funny because I guess I find myself thinking, again, if you're a fighter, you got to hold your ground too, right? I mean, you got to know who you are. And by doing something like that, by changing that thing, it's not Martin Lawrence anymore, is it? If you submit to that kind of treatment, right?
Right.
Was that a hard decision to make?
It was a hard decision to make because I really wanted a lot of people to see it. And I knew the NC-17 would cut people down from seeing, you know, it wouldn't reach as many people as it needed to reach or I wanted it to reach. But I knew I had to stand behind what I believed in, which was my material, the set, that it was strong, even though it was vulgar, X-rated or whatever. It was funny, and I had to stand behind that. And so if it meant me taking the NC-17, you know, and less people seeing it, then I was willing to do that.
Because I guess I'm wondering, too, just talking about your stand-up, do you remember the first few times you went on stage? Did you shadowbox even then before you went out there? Is that something you always done?
I don't remember shadowboxing, but I remember being nervous and just really, it was the first time I was going on stage and just never, not knowing how it was going to turn out and anything. And I didn't do well first time I went on stage.
Where were you?
I was in D.C. at
Back
the Comedy Cafe.
Yeah.
And I went on stage. And as soon as I stepped on stage, a drunk lady was in the audience. And she said, "Oh, God, not another J.J." And so... So as soon as she said that, it threw my whole, whatever I was going to talk about, it went out the window. Because I was like, "What did you say, lady? I'm not JJ." What? I didn't know what I was talking about. I was all over the place.
So when did you actually feel it the first time you had to, when you knew that it was you? When was that? How many weeks or months had you been doing it when you felt like, "Oh, this is me now. I own this."
Well, what I did the first time when I bombed, I couldn't believe it. And what I did was I came back the next week, and I paid money to see the headliners for the weekend, who they had performing that weekend. And I just watched them and just watched how their professionalism and how they worked on stage and how comfortable they were with the crowd and how confident they were and everything else. And I just studied that. And once I got that down, I went back to perform a couple of weeks after that. And then I started getting response. So I would get a laugh or two here and there one time. Then I get a laugh or two, three the next time I come back. And then it just got bigger and bigger as I got more and more material.
At one point, I'm wondering how long you were doing it when you felt like you had a whole set. I mean, how long were you at it when you felt like, "Oh, okay, this is a set now. I got a routine."
I would have to say that would have taken at least a year.
A year?
Yeah, to get solid material, you know, it probably would have at least take a year. You can't just come up with material like that.
I guess I just feel like, too, part of this, you came with this group of guys who came after Richard Pryor, who was also a really physical guy, too. I mean, people, you know, he had jokes, no two ways about that, but he's also really physical.
Yes.
And that Pryor physicality was a big influence on you, too, wasn't it?
Big, big influence. Richard Pryor is the reason I'm doing stand-up comedy. I mean...
No doubt. But he was a really, really physical guy, which, that's the thing, if you listen to the recordings, you don't get a sense of... When he came on stage, that thing I'm talking about with you, he owned the theater. Mm-hmm. I mean, he came out and it was big and he never stopped moving. Just watching you sweat in your stand-up and doing time about things. Oh, this is like watching. It just made me think, God, comedians don't sweat on stage like that anymore.
Right. I sweat for the people, man. I sweat to give them what they want.
My guest who's giving it back to the audience is Martin Lawrence, who has a new stand-up special on Showtime. Were you nervous about going back?
A little bit. I wanted to make sure I had the material that would hold up, that people would accept and respect and enjoy. And so I had a little nerves that if I still had it, you know, wanted to make sure I still had the chops.
What?
You know, just, you know, I don't take nothing for granted. You know, if I haven't done it in a while, you know I have to gear up for it. I have to work up to it, so.
Well, you know, but you still had the chops. You know, you have skills. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. You mentioned in the special, like, about 30 years or so. And so at what point when you go on a stage, you kind of go, "Oh, I got this"? I mean, when you first went back, when was that the first night or what was it?
Wasn't the first night. It felt like it could have been the first night because I got a good response when I went back. So, but I don't think I said to myself, "I got this." I don't think I ever said I got this. I don't think I ever say I got this because every night is a different night. So I just try to have the confidence to deliver what I'm out there to deliver. But I don't just say to myself, "It's automatic. I got it," because every audience is different.
Yeah, no, every audience is different, but, you know, I don't know how to put this to you. You're Martin Lawrence. So you go out there and there's automatic... Oh, which is a question I want to ask you. When you go out there, there's automatically an expectation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of hard to deal with, too? Because when you were first getting started, you were still figuring out who Martin Lawrence was, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were still building the house that became Martin. Now, people go and they expect to see that. You know,
right.
They expect to see that structure.
Right, and you want to deliver. You want to, so that's where the nerves come in, where the, you know, okay, you get a little nervous and everything because you want to be able to deliver up to the level that they expect you to deliver, that they're used to seeing you deliver at. So that's where the nerves may come in, and you want to make sure it's up to par.
The specials are roughly an hour. Is that how long the set was, or was the set a little bit longer than that?
It's just a little bit longer than an hour, maybe.
I was almost a little surprised because I thought you just come out hitting, you know.
Yeah.
And you really just take your time with it. And
yeah, try to ramp up to it and ramp up and let the jokes ramp up and, you know, get in tune with my audience. I'm in no rush. You know, we're going to be here together for an hour. Let's just all take our time and enjoy the moment. And that's just what it's about.
What was the last stand-up you did? Do you remember the last time you were on stage before you did this?
Somewhere on tour.
Okay.
Somewhere on tour, yeah.
So about the time of You So Crazy, Run Tell That, about that time? About that.
Well, Run Tell That was.
Okay, okay, well, Run Tell That, yeah. Because I just wondered if you just felt like then, I'm tired.
Yeah. Hey, sometimes you do. You get tired, man. When you're on the road just going from city to city to city to city, sometimes you wake up, you don't even know what city you're in, you know. So that can be tiring. But the reward is much greater. You know, when it's successful and the people, the fans enjoy you and embrace you, the reward is just much greater.
It's funny, though, because you talk about that a little bit in the sort of the opening of the special, and it almost sounds kind of spiritual when you talk about it like that. You know, you're kind of like a preacher in front of, in front of your congregation a little bit, aren't you?
Yeah, it's, as long as it's giving good vibes and it, it's coming from a good place, and it's, I'm trying to send a good message. It's spiritual. It's a blessing.
But I say spiritual because I wonder as you're doing it, you just kind of feel this lift. You know, you feel like it's something bigger than you, which is
yeah.
That's what I mean by spiritual. Yeah. Does it feel like that to you?
Yeah, I feel like it's bigger than me. I'm here to touch people. I'm here for a reason. I'm blessed to be a comedian for a reason, to make people laugh, to take their minds off of whatever problems or any anxiety they may have, even if it's for an hour or 5 minutes. You know, that's what I'm here to do. So it's a blessed position to be in, and I don't take it lightly. So I enjoy what I do.
Who's the first stand-up you remember seeing?
For me, Richard Pryor.
You actually saw him?
Yeah. Well,
no, like in the live concert?
Live. Eddie Murphy.
Where'd you see him? Do you remember?
Richmond Coliseum.
Okay. Oh, man. So that's when it was Rockstar Eddie.
Rockstar Eddie. Yeah, yeah. And it was one of the best things I saw. And when I saw Eddie perform that night, I was in the audience and I was up probably in the nosebleed seats, and I was looking at him, and he was so good, man. I said to myself, I just shook my head. I said, man, you got work to do, Martin. You got work to do. And I went back home and just started working.
When I see somebody in that big a space like that, like when you're doing stand-up in an arena as compared to doing stand-up in a club, that seems to me as just somebody who sees comedy like a really scary proposition. Because, you know, when it's a room, and you're a boxer. Let's use a boxing metaphor. When you're a boxer, you know how far you have to reach out, right? Mm-hmm. You know it's a really enclosed space. Mm-hmm. You know how to create tension in the space. You know how to relieve tension in the space. In a really big house like that, what does that feel like?
It's a rush. It's the adrenaline that goes with it, and all those people, and it's also a good thing because they're all screaming for you. You know, and they're applauding for you. So now you just have to, tap into that energy that they're giving you, and you have to give them something. You have to talk to them and communicate with them and make them laugh. And no matter how big it is, if it's a small room, you touch them. If it's a big arena, you touch them. But, you know, I just happen to touch them with my voice.
Right, right. But I just want to, in a big space like that, if you feel like you have to be a different version of yourself, because obviously you got to throw out that much more energy because you're filling a much bigger space. But do you feel like you have to be a different Martin when you're in an arena as compared to a smaller house?
I got to be Big Game Martin.
Okay.
I got to be Big Game Martin on a big stage. when you play on the big stage, it's like playing in the championship, playing in the playoffs. You know, you got to play big on the big stage. So that's what I try to do. I play big on the big stage. Now, if I'm in a comedy club, I might be a little more casual about it, you know, the material and how I put the jokes out or what I'm talking about or whatever. Just because I'm in the comedy club, I could take my time a little more or whatever, you know. But when it's a big auditorium, it's time for a big game.
We'll take a break. I'm sitting across from Big Game Martin. You know him better as Martin Lawrence. His new stand-up special on Showtime. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This podcast is produced by nonprofit radio station KCRW. Support the podcast you enjoy by donating at kcrw.com/join. And thanks.
Welcome back. My guest is being tickled by a little bit of Coca-Cola across from me. This is The Treatment. I'm thrilled to be talking to Martin Lawrence, who's come back to the stage bringing the big guns for this Showtime special. Again, when I started the interview, I talked about all the things you've done that people think of you now as. Probably people identify you more as an actor, especially in this century, than as a comedian. And what does that do to you, that people come to you and they talk to you about the movies or the TV shows? And
well, I'm happy when people recognize any of my work. You know, if it's stand-up or if it's the movies or TV, I'm happy anybody that recognizes that. So it's a good feeling.
But does it feel a little odd when people start talking to you about Martin or Bad Boys 2 and you just sort of think, is that, because it makes me wonder if that's one of the reasons you went back to doing stand-up, because I think you identify yourself as a stand-up first and foremost, right? And at a certain point when people kind of bring up all these other things, you think, well, let me remind them who Martin Lawrence is.
Right, what started it all.
Yeah, but that definition, though, for you as a stand-up, I mean, there's a generation of people who don't know you as that. And what about your kids?
Well, it's something that my oldest got to see me perform. She came to a live show, and she sees what Daddy does.
How old is she?
She's 20.
So she had never seen you do stand-up.
Never seen me do stand-up and everything. So you can imagine when the language and everything else when she saw it. But, you know, they know that Daddy keeps it real and Daddy's on the raw side and everything. And when they're up to age, you know, they can handle it.
But she's never seen you before. Okay, I'll give you that. But let's say she gets to see you be that big. You know, it's a difference between seeing you in movies on TV shows and seeing you walk out in a big theater and hearing that thing and seeing you. And what does she say about seeing you like that on stage after?
It was big to her. It was a big moment to her. You know, she was thrilled, overwhelmed. that's her dad up there. You know, and but very proud, just very proud.
Because she probably has friends, too, who, like, grown up seeing you in movies. And, you know, for goodness sakes, you do a bear in open seas. I mean, you have done that thing. Now, if you had told me 20 years ago that you and Ice Cube would be in family movies, I would still be laughing at you. So that's so far. I mean, you must feel like in some ways you've taken such a long journey. In some ways you had to go back home again. And going back home is stand-up.
Yeah.
Does it feel good being home?
It feels good. Feels good because the reception is so warm and so loving, and it feels real good. And just sitting here talking with you, and you know, talking about my stand up and everything, out being out here again, feels good.
Having seen you, there's a thing that one of my favorite jokes. I can't tell a whole joke, but it ends with "What is your name?"
Oh yeah.
Which I think is my favorite piece of yours, because there's such a build to it. How long does it take to you to build a piece like that?
I don't know. It can happen in a week. It can happen in a month. It can happen. It just depends, because I have a lot of people around me, my brother, my best friends, and everything, and we talk about a lot of the jokes, and we sit around the locker room at home, and we'll come up with stuff, and we'll add stuff to a joke or whatever, and say, what you think about this? This could help it, this could make it better, or whatever, and that's how we come up with things.
But it's funny, because there's actually now so much more comedy than there was when you started. I mean, comedy is now inescapable. I mean, you can pick up, turn on your phone or your tablet or whatever and get comedy any time of the day or night.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be a little scary to go out knowing that the world has comedy, including your comedy, but, every place.
But the world needs it. I mean, when you think of all the stuff going on in the world today, the injustice and everything that's just tormenting us. I mean, the world needs comedy so bad. I mean, if you get 5 minutes of comedy a day just to laugh, I mean, that's helping. You know, that's helping relieve some kind of anxiety or something. But the world needs comedy.
Yeah, probably more now than ever. I mean, I guess I was asking just because I wonder if that makes you think or make you wonder about coming back, because there is so much out there now that you can sort of dial it up.
Well, I came back for my reasons, just because I wanted to connect with my audience again and everything else, and I love stand-up, you know, but I'm glad the fact that I do what I do. I do have an opportunity when I do get out there to touch people, to make them take their minds off of whatever their negative thinking is for 10, 20, 30 minutes or whatever, and just to take them away for a minute with some comedy, I love that. I love that feeling.
What was the first year you made a living as a stand-up? Do you remember what that year was like?
The first year?
The first year you made a living as a stand-up.
I was comedy club to comedy club. I was all over the circuit, you know, just performing just different comedy clubs.
And did it feel like you think, wow, I mean, you're actually making a living doing something that people think was as entertainment? I mean, that must have felt like a crazy thought to you, didn't it?
No. It didn't feel like a crazy thought, because I had to make it in comedy or I wouldn't have made it at all. That was the option. I gave myself no option. When I told my mother I wanted to be a comedian, she looked at me and she said, baby, well, you know, that's really hard. That's a hard, you know, field to get into and everything. And I looked at her and I said, Mama, either I make it in comedy or I don't make it at all. And when I said that, I gave myself no other options. So I had to make it.
So at the end of that year, though, when you're playing on those clubs, you're thinking, I'm actually doing this. Did you just feel like this is it?
I didn't feel like that until I got Star Search.
Is that what changed it for you?
Yeah.
Because that's your first time in front of a national audience.
Yeah, because Star Search, I was a long shot anyway to get on Star Search, because I was vulgar on stage and everything in the comedy clubs. And I was supposed to be the last person that made it on Star Search, because it's a family show and it was so clean. So all the comedians in D.C. were like, well, we know who's not going to get on Star Search. So the odds were stacked against me anyway, you know. But when Ed McMahon, his daughter, Claudia McMahon, she was holding the auditions, and she came for the auditions, and I just did my act. I did what I do. And the next week, she called me and asked me, was I interested in going on Star Search?
Does that surprise you? You just thought, because this is what you're saying is basically what you did with You So Crazy. I have to be who I am. I can't change this.
Right.
So even back then, you said, listen, either I'm Martin Lawrence or I'm not Martin Lawrence.
Right.
And it paid off. That making that big a bet on yourself that early must have shown you that this was meant for you, didn't it?
Yes. Yes.
My guest, who always bets on black, is Martin Lawrence. He has a new stand-up special. I'm sorry, it's too easy. A new stand-up special on Showtime. Tell me, though, about the first time you're in a movie, which is Do the Right Thing, right?
Do the Right Thing, yeah, Spike Lee.
What was that like, seeing yourself in a movie?
It was great. It was great. It was like I couldn't believe it. I had made it to the big screens. Robin Harris is the reason I got in Do the Right Thing, him and Robbie Reed, who is a casting director. And they told Spike about me, and Spike saw me perform at the Comedy Act Theater. And, you know, Robin Harris told him, man, he's funny. Spike, you need to take a look at him. Spike took a look at me and then put me in the movie. So it was a great experience for me.
And then, you, as I was saying, you got to work with Robin Harris twice because you guys did House Party.
House Party, yeah.
And was Robin in House Party first, or you? How did that work?
I believe Robin probably was cast first.
And did he tell Reggie Hullin about you, or had Reggie seen
you? No, I think Reggie knew about me from Do the Right Thing.
Which also leads to a relationship, because then you do Boomerang with
Eddie.
Eddie and Reggie.
Yeah, that was great, because now I'm working with one of my childhood idols, so to speak, and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, man, I was on top of the world. I just felt great.
And then you got to co-star in the movie with him. You guys
and
did life together.
I got to co-star with him, and he told me, he called me a month before we did it.
And that movie you were talking about was Life.
Life, yeah. He called me and said, I'm going to call you in about a few months and about this movie I want you to do with me. And I said, I'll be here.
For those who don't know, it follows two black men in prison in the 30s. It
starts for something they didn't do.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically comedy, social commentary thing. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, it could still play today.
Mm-hmm.
It's comedy about a subject that touches a lot of people of color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most black men under 25 know somebody who's been in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And to start off with doing something like that, starting off like that, I mean, that sounds to me like it's really kind of an intimidating subject to make a comedy about.
Mm-hmm. Well, it worked.
It did work. But I mean, I just wonder if that scared you, because to date, that's probably because you've done a couple of, I guess, Thin Line Between Love and Hate.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, which you made as a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, because you've done a few things that have, like, kind of serious sort of undertones. Life is one, Thin Line Between Love and Hate is another. Do you like that, being able to go back and forth?
I like treading that water a little bit, you know, and in that line, you know, of serious and comedy and all that. You know, I think I have a little bit of both in me.
Oh, sure.
So I like to try both of them.
Because I guess I wonder, too, when you were doing Thin Line, you thought, audiences know me as Martin Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
Will they accept me as a regular guy who's caught up?
Mm-hmm.
Were you worried about that?
For Thin Line?
For Thin Line, yeah.
No, I wasn't worried about it. I felt if we were authentic and I was able to play the character the way the character is supposed to be played, that people would embrace it. And we had such a great co-star with Lynn Whitfield.
Oh, my God.
We couldn't go wrong. You know, we couldn't go wrong with Lynn.
But I'm sure this must happen to you a lot. People think they know who and what Martin Lawrence is.
Mm-hmm.
You must get some delight out of surprising people and letting them know there's more to you than they think there is, or there's more to you than meets the eye.
Exactly. I do, because people don't know me like they think they know me. They don't know my heart like they think they know, and I like surprising people for the better.
So I'm guessing probably a lot of people said, why are you doing Thin Line? I mean, you should be doing something else. And what did you say when they said that to you? Because you must have been challenged on that by a lot of people.
No, I wasn't at all. This was something that I wanted to do, and I had the opportunity to do it. The cards were in my hands, and Doug McHenry and George Jackson came together and produced it, you know, and asked me, did I want to do it? And I said yes. And I told them I wanted to direct it, and they was on board with that, and we did it.
That's just the last question. Your first day on the floor as a director, what was that like?
Scary. Scary because I was a young boy and I didn't really know what I was doing. I mean, I had the opportunity to be in this power position, but I didn't really know much about it. So I had to learn as I went along. And the good thing was I had help. You know, Doug McHenry and George Jackson and David Rayner and all these guys are on the set was helping me as I went along.
That's a lot because you're directing a movie, you're directing other actors, and then you have to direct yourself and then sit back and look at yourself in the movie. I mean, cause just talking about it is making me sweat. I don't know what it's doing to you. Can you look at that movie now?
Yeah, I can. You know, it was a tough movie to make, but I'm proud of it.
So when are you going to direct again?
I would never say never, but it ain't going to be no time soon.
Well, we're out of time, but let me say soon. Anytime you want to come back here, you're more than welcome. Thank you so
much
for
your time. Thank you, I appreciate it.
Well, completely my pleasure. My guest He's still Big Game Martin. Martin Lawrence, his new comedy special is on Showtime. He's doing time, but we're not. It's a great special. Again, thank you for doing this.
Thank you again.
We have a recording engineer here at NPR West. This is Marcia Conwell. The show is mixed by Kat Yore. It's edited by Blake Veit, who's the associate producer. I don't have no big game. It's the treatment.
To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to KCRW.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.